This is an NBA Finals Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brunson holding up high against Vassell. Now cuts to the left, free throw line. Hops back, digs in, shot up, and good! Brunson, big bucket, 37 seconds to go.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brandon Sprague, NBA Finals Week on The Fan is brought to you by Video Only. For the best deals on Samsung, LG, and Sony TVs, shop Video Only, or you'll be sorry. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 FM and 1080 AM, The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan and The Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Tuesdays are...
Mail Sack!
The Sparta TRT edition coming up in the final hour, so get the Mail Sack questions in, 503-864-6326. Put them on the YouTube chat, Twitter, you name it, wherever. We'll get it. We'll get to that in the final hour. An hour from right now, we're going to pause some of our basketball and Brendan Sorsby conversations. We're going to talk with Sean Hammond, who covers the Chicago Bears for the Chicago Tribune. Because the Bears are going through maybe a relocation to Hammond, Indiana.
The Indiana Bears.
But I keep saying Sean Hammond. I'm pretty sure it's Sean Hammond. But
yeah, it's Sean
also
Hammond.
Hammond, Indiana. So it's kind of throwing my brain through a loop of like, I'm not saying his name wrong.
Is this guy the reason they're leaving?
But yeah,
he wants to go cover him in his hometown of Hammond, Indiana.
But he's going to hop on. I just want to, I've only read about it. I don't really know the inner workings of it all. And it's government against team. And it's a city state basically saying, why are we funding everything for billionaires? So they're kind of pushing back, but they don't want to lose the Bears. But the Bears are willing to go Indiana because Indiana will just bend over and give them whatever they want.
Yep.
So we'll just kind of get the ins and outs and the workings of if the Chicago Bears are going to turn into the Indiana Bears, because we're also going through a funding situation with Tom Dundon.
Yes, we are.
So it's not the same. Obviously, they're going through a new stadium. We're going through renovation, but it's how much do you allocate? What's the real bickering between here? What are we talking about? So we'll get a read on that. And then also just ask him about the Caleb Madden curse cover thing.
Yes.
So he'll join us coming up at 8 a.m. We'll get to the mail sack in the final hour. But we start the second hour of the radio program with Game 3 of the NBA Finals.
Phenomenal game last night. Great series so far.
Great energy.
Yep.
I've never wanted to be at a sporting event as bad as I wanted to be at that one since. Ooh, buddy, I'd have to think about this one.
That was the most...
2016, maybe, Game 7.
Yeah.
Like, wanting to actually... I'm watching, and I'm like, I wish I could be there.
Yes.
Game 7, 2016 might be it. There's some good moments. Obviously, the Blazers got back to the playoffs for the first time this year, but that's the first round.
There's a little bit of a difference between the NBA Finals and the first round of the playoffs.
Madison Square Garden with the alien, and the Knicks are up 2-0. The energy of that place. Yeah. Oh, I wanted to be there so bad.
It's the most. I was thinking about that. So the game, I'm with you. I turned the coverage on really early because, one, I just like the crew other than when Draymond's there. I'm like, why are we ruining this great show with Draymond Green? Can we stop doing that? It was just the energy was great. So I had it on TV early, and I was trying to think to myself, like, Game 7 obviously was very anticipated last year.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of surprising to myself included and a lot of others that it even went 7 games. And you're like, oh my God, could they actually pull this thing off? Outside of that Game 7, that's probably the most excited I've been for an NBA Finals game since Game 6 of 2016. Because LeBron and Cleveland won Game 5 at Golden State when they were down 3-1, and you thought, all right, and then you're going into Game 6 with maybe a glimmer of hope, and they end up blowing them out, and we know how that series eventually went. But there haven't been many Finals games where I've been that excited and anticipated that much, just with the energy and everything going on, the storylines. Like, it just, that was a massive, massive draw for, I think, sports fans, whether you love basketball or not. And the game certainly delivered in multiple different ways, because it was back and forth, compelling from basically start to finish.
It was. It was a start early for San Antonio, and New York looked shaky. They were turning the ball over. They just looked nervous. And then an 11-point lead swung the other way because the second quarter was 42-24.
Dude, they could not miss in the second quarter.
They were in fuego, took a halftime lead. And then we talked about the third a little bit of just like people not getting back to the seats till 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
Spurs came out the gate ready to go, outscored them by 8. And then the fourth quarter, the Spurs held it for the most part, but the Knicks certainly made it tight, especially at the end there. Brunson into 3 to cut it 111-108. And then OG Anunoby hit a 3 in the corner over Dylan Harper.
He had a great game last night. Yeah.
He was fantastic.
Yeah.
The Spurs, though, they got a little more from guys. Castle, I thought, was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Wemby was the MVP last night. He was exceptional. He had 32, 8, 6, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I thought Fox, he didn't shoot the ball efficiently, but obviously he hit the maybe the biggest shot of the game with the jumper with about 12 seconds left.
Arguably to seal it, yeah.
And I actually thought Dylan Harper was phenomenal. I know he was 1-8 from three.
All of his looks were pretty good, though.
I'm not expecting his efficiencies to be good as a rookie playing in the NBA Finals on the road. It's more like the look and the feel. He had 9 boards. He dished out 4. He gave you 13. And he just, he was aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't shy away from shooting the ball when he had the looks, which was the right call.
Yeah.
And I thought when he drove, he just put such an onus on their guards and their perimeter guys because he's bigger.
Yes.
And so he's not as easy to kind of lock down or stop from attacking. And I thought he was doing a lot of the right things. His efficiencies, again, were not great. 13 points on 18 shots. But I just thought Dylan Harper was really stinking good in this game. And I'd add, before we get to the Wemby element, Wemby's the star of this team and maybe the league. I will continue to harp on my biggest takeaway from this run, whatever it be, the finals, the losing in the finals. My biggest takeaway is that Dylan Harper is a rookie, is already ready to be playing, and that should be the most terrifying thing because you already knew Wemby was a freak. He's an alien. He's great.
Yes.
Dylan Harper tapping in and becoming a go-to guy, even as a rookie in some spots, what's that going to mean next year and going forward?
As a 19-year-old in the NBA Finals.
That's, to me, that's the terrifying thing. If he can get his body a little more cut, he gains just a tad more weight at 6'6".
Yeah, he's only going to get better.
He's already a tank, man. Like, if his shooting gets better, that's the terrifying thing I think of the Spurs, aside from Wemby, is just the idea that guys like Castle and Harper get better from this point.
Well, and there was moments too early in the fourth quarter when they're holding on to and building a little bit of a lead that he was running the show more than De'Aaron Fox was. And I think they even pointed to that in the broadcast of like, this is the right call. I know he didn't have a great night shooting the ball from three, to your point. 1 of 8 wasn't great for him, but everything else he did impacted the game. He's a tremendous defender for his age because of his size and his athleticism. He had that moment where he had the dunk over OG on an Obi and kind of talked a little bit S to him. He's got that spiciness. We saw that firsthand when Scoot tried to big boy him, and then he ended up single-handedly winning a game on the road and erasing a 15-point lead without Victor Wembanyama in the lineup. So we saw it firsthand back in the first round. He's only continued to get better, and it's a part of the angle that is terrifying about San Antonio because they have a piece that we've never seen before and a guy doing things that we've never witnessed before, but then you add the other elements on top of it. One player can only do so much. We saw that with years of LeBron in Cleveland the first time around. You could be great. You can get your team to the NBA Finals. It's not going to mean a lot if your second-best player is nowhere near an all-star caliber guy, and it certainly didn't in those eras for LeBron and Cleveland. That's not the case for Wembanyama. He's got dudes all around him, and I'm with you. I thought they all picked up their play a little bit, and then you flip it on the other side, and for New York's angle, it's like, man, San Antonio outplayed you in 3 of the 4 quarters of the game. You can't just have one hot quarter and the rest of it be, not terrible basketball, but not great basketball.
I'd beg to differ. It's terrible. 20 in the fourth, 22 in first, and 27. Sub 30 in 3 of the 4 quarters.
I point to the plus minus in the fourth and say it was only 23-20, so both teams were a little tight, a lot of fouls, but totally agree with the point. Karl-Anthony Towns did not make a three. That's one of their biggest advantages in this series is his ability to stretch the floor and knock down threes. He was outstanding in the first two games. I don't think he was terrible last night. He just didn't play up to that standard. You're feeling the bridges suck on offense
huge,
is starting to hurt you a little bit because there's no impact offensively at all for him. He had a play or two defensively that he made. Outside of that, there's no impact on the offensive end. And for as good as Brunson has been, and he's been outstanding, especially in clutch moments of this series, It's not the most efficient nights. Now, I know that's kind of the player he is. He's not a super high assist guy as a point guard. He's more of a ball-dominant scoring guard, and I grant you that. But some of the numbers that are out, I think he has as many turnovers as he has assists in the series so far.
He had 5 last night and 5 assists. He had 5 turnovers, 5
so he has
assists.
13 turnovers, 13 assists in the series, and he scored 82 points on 81 field goal attempts. Yeah. And so it's just the numbers haven't been terrible when you've looked at them. He's certainly been big in big moments. It just hasn't been, especially early in games, he hasn't been the most efficient scorer of the basketball, and then he kind of picks it up as the game goes on. But they dug themselves a little bit of a hole last night, and yes, they were able to climb out of it out of the second quarter, but they couldn't maintain it in the second half.
Well, I thought what San Antonio did, aside from kind of the shaky, nerve-rattling start it felt like the Knicks were playing with, they were all throwing the ball to opposite ways that each other were cutting or
moving.
Dude,
the first 5 minutes was really bad basketball.
They just looked so incredibly shaky and nervous that I'm like, dude, this has to be an impact of being at the Garden and being back home with a 2-0 lead.
Yeah.
Kind of feeling the weight of that. But even after that, like, even if you give them that grace, you got to wake up and snap out of it. You're playing basketball. Bridges getting two early fouls, and we'll talk about foul stuff because Mike Brown gave his thoughts after the game.
Yes.
Bridges' first two fouls were so quick, he's out of the game.
And no way to get into the flow of
There's
it at
no
all.
Flow. Yeah. And then you look at his last game against San Antonio, he had 20 points. He shot 66.7% from three, had six boards and six assists, and he had two fouls. So, yeah. What he was in game one was non-existent, and they still somehow won. And then what he was in game two, I thought, kind of put him over the top, because you get a game like that, that's going to make a difference.
It's a bit of a bonus for him this time of year, yeah.
It's huge, because when you look at their bench, yes, Landry Shamet is playing well. He didn't have a great night last night, so his yeah. shooting got a little cold last night. He's 1-7 from three.
He was due for a night like that. The guy could not miss so far in the playoffs.
Mitchell Robinson's not offense for you. Somehow you got 10 out of Clarkson, but I just don't know how much I'd rely on that happening again.
Yeah. One of them was a miracle jumper and late in the shot clock.
Deuce McBride only shot twice, and he was 0-2. When you look at their bench scoring,
yeah, there's nothing there.
Right now, it's largely it's Landry Shamet. Yep. And then any offensive putback stuff Mitchell Robinson gets. You need Bridges. I know you got it from Hart. OG had 28 on 13 shots. You need Bridges to get you at a minimum 15. I just think if they're going to win the series, Bridges has to score 15 points or more in the games yep. for them to be able to close this team out. It's one thing to get away from it in game one. You saw what it can mean in game two. I don't think this Spurs team can lose the series going forward if Bridges is not going to score 15. 2 points on 1 of 5. That's the thing. 5 attempts.
Right. You're not even trying.
I thought Cat was not being aggressive enough on offense.
Yeah.
But I actually thought
he took 10 shots on the night.
I thought he was stellar on defense. Agreed. When he guarded Wemby, he contested really well. I thought he had some good hands, good blocks. He made an impact. You felt the 3 steals and 2 blocks. It's the offense for me with him. He needs to look for his shot more. And I felt like he passed up too many threes early, and that kind of took him out of it. And then you saw him attempt too late, and he wasn't close with the first, and then he missed the second. Bridges is the takeaway for me from New York side. We can get to the Spurs side. Bridges to me is you cannot be 1 for 5 with 2 points, dude.
No.
This is where you traded 5 picks.
We need you.
I need you. I need you to score. If they're going to win the series,
yeah.
Brunson's inefficiencies are going to be there. He's not a dish-diming point guard, right? He's going to be the score-first guy. He hits big shots in big moments. I can deal with that. You need Bridges to shoot more than 5 times and to yeah. score more than 2 freaking points if he's going to play 29 minutes or more.
Well, I think it hurts a little bit, too, because you ended up with a above-average game, I would argue, from OG Anunoby. He was outstanding last night, couldn't miss. And then I've kind of joked, and we remember this when Hart was in Portland, he randomly has nights where he knocks down some shots, and you're like, hey, look at that. They left you open all night, and you made him pay.
Yeah.
And he did that. In the first half, in that second quarter, he was a huge part of them scoring 42 and knocking down open looks. I think he started the game 3 of 4 from three or something like that, ended up with 16 on 6 of 10 shooting. And so you got an offensive impact from a guy who you don't normally rely on. And OG is certainly an elite player in this league, but he's not a guy that every night you're going to rely on getting 28 points for you. So I think that's what hurt, was that you had other guys kind of go above their weight level, and that if you would have just had an average game from a Bridges or an average game from a Cat offensively speaking, it's much more competitive. And it's a similar feeling, I would argue, that probably San Antonio had, which is why the series is so compelling, is that despite all of this, everything that we're saying, it's what, 111, 108 with 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter? Bridges is a non-impact. Cat only shoots 10 times. You got essentially nothing from your bench, and Shamet's been carrying you, and he couldn't make a shot to save his life last night. He had a shot blocked at the rim, or he was a little too careless with it with Wemby. All of that being said, you're down by 3 with a couple of minutes to go with a chance to win.
Oh, they're right there.
And that's why the series has been so compelling, because we were making the exact same argument after the first two games of San Antonio of man, this guy didn't play great. Fox is doing nothing. Wemby didn't have the best game. But, dude, you had the ball with a chance to win the game at the end.
I know.
And you could have flipped a coin either way. And so this series coming in, I was genuinely excited for it, for the storylines to begin with. I also had hope that it was going to be a good long series. New York winning the first two in San Antonio certainly surprised me. I wasn't surprised they got a split, but it surprised me that they won both.
That wakes up for people basketball, maybe. That wakes that people
both
that
games
up.
That does not happen very often. The team wins both games on the road.
I think that's the second. I think this is the second NBA Finals ever. I think I saw the stat right.
Uh huh.
Second NBA Finals ever where the first three games are won by the road teams,
which is remarkable, because the NBA Finals have been around a long time. Only have 3 of those in history. It tells you how rare that is. But this, it's turning into the series that I hoped it would be on the outset. And I didn't have the thought too well that this series is over. You knew you were going to get a, this is our last gasp effort from San Antonio, and you were going to get a great game from Wemby, because it's just kind of who he is. It's in his DNA. He was outstanding last night. And just like that, you wake up and you got yourselves a series. And I felt like at the start we were going seven, and nothing has changed in my mind. This thing's locked and loaded for a long time to come.
I haven't looked at all of the shooting splits and percentage breakdowns. It truly is I can't tell you who I think the better team in the series is. I really feel like it's a 50-50 thing, because for what you mentioned, you can make the argument for the Spurs, I think, even in both games. I know the first game, I think, ended up being a 10-point deficit.
They ended up pulling away in the last minute, yeah.
I mean, going into that last couple minutes there, though, that's a tight ball game, and oh my God, the Spurs, are they going to lose? They lost the game.
Right.
Game two, same thing. They had the shot to win the game. And then game three, as poorly as some of these guys played for the Knicks, they had no bench. To be as close as they were, I mean, San Antonio, you give them credit for holding them off. Like, I really can't tell you there's one side or the other. This is a 50-50 split in three games of a finals where that's kind of what last year's was.
Yes.
I think that was the beauty of last year's. This one's just more star-packed, right? It's Brunson, right. It's the Knicks, it's Wemby, it's the Spurs, like it's the
you
new
got a
league.
Legacy franchise and a major media market going head-to-head.
Yes, like, a title drought, major media market head-to-head. It makes it interesting. I thought a couple things stood out to me, because series, I think at this point, the adjustment stuff starts to kind of fade, and it just boils down to who's going to execute and hit shots.
We know what you want to do. You know what we want to do. Can you make a shot?
I thought Castle and company were really good pressing up harder on their guards, Brunson in particular, of like, how many possessions did the Knicks have for you where you watched him dribble, he hadn't made a pass, and you're looking down and you go, oh my God,
there's nine seconds
left on the shot clock.
And they've done nothing and haven't even gotten into
any actions. Yeah. He hasn't even passed the ball. He's doing this shifty stuff to get a shot or get a look to somebody else. I thought that stood out. And then Wemby. I mean, we had Minix on yesterday, and he talked about the most disappointing thing is Wemby.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know some of his numbers are fine. He's not been the player we need him to be. And the boneheaded plays at the end of game two.
Dribbling off your foot.
Passing against a back of a teammate.
Right.
But he's like, it's Wemby. And I thought Wemby, from the very beginning, made it abundantly clear. I'm getting shots at the rim. I'm dunking the ball. I'm getting easy putbacks.
4 for 4. What did he start? All inside the paint?
All inside the paint. Now, he shot only 4 threes. He hit 50% of them, to his credit. But
that's the way his game should look. Don't take 7, 8, 9 of them a game.
Well, I also thought defensively, they didn't just keep everything. They didn't do it a lot, but they shifted in and out of a little bit of zone there. And then I thought Wemby's impact defensively, there was about 6 to 7 possessions that I counted, and there might have been more, where I just thought guys were going to go up, and then Wemby is in their stratosphere.
He's the presence, and you bail.
They had a couple steal possessions where they were on breaks, and because Wemby caught up, like, Hart dribbled out of the paint and was like, all right, we're setting this up. Went from a 2-on-1 to a 2-on-2 with that guy.
Right.
No, thank you. And so he's just, his impact, I thought he was fantastic. I mean, that's a finals MVP performance right there. 32 points, 18 shots. Got to the line. He made an impact in the rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks category. It's all you can ask.
I mean, it's the thing that I think wears on you, I would imagine, mentally as the series goes on, the more you see him. Because you only see him a number, you know, once or twice during the regular season. Like, you know, how many times they play?
They uniquely saw them three times because of the
cup game, which is more than you usually get in East and West. But still, it's different now. You've played him 3 times in a week, and I think that awareness and understanding of his presence builds as the series goes on. You saw that from OKC. I mean, SGA is a back-to-back MVP and as good as you could get scoring the ball in the NBA.
Yep.
And he had moments late in the Western Conference Finals where he's dribbling into the paint and just bailing, just turning around and going back out to the three-point line because he's seen it and his shot's been blocked. And so if it's happened to you a number of times, if you've seen him, you know, make an impact on somebody else, it just creeps into your psyche whether you want it to or not. And it takes away just an element of your aggressiveness that changes the way you're going to operate on the offensive end. And it's part of what makes him so elite, that the box score is always going to look great, but then you add on top of that, there's things that happen in the game that don't even show up on the box score that means he's playing better than it would even indicate when you just look at the lines and the stats that he puts out.
It was a remarkable game three. I'm so excited. Did you see Wemby in the Central Park painting a statue?
I did see that. Yes, I did.
Swag, did you see that? They caught Wemby. He was sitting in the park. I think Harper was with him, and maybe a girlfriend or a sister or something was sitting. They were on a park bench.
I missed this.
So all 7'6" of Wimby in the shortest shorts ever. So he looks like 60s Kareem.
Yes.
Gotcha.
He's sitting in the park, and he's drawing a statue that he's looking at in the park.
Like somebody had a great joke.
Harper's on his phone, not doing anything. And Wimby,
could that be more French?
No, it's about as French. If he had a baguette next to him, maybe. I don't know, what a food
was he
item.
Wearing a beret?
A beret on top of it. Somebody said the walkable parks in New York are to Wemby what the strip clubs in Atlanta are to Harden. And I laughed out loud when
not
I read
a distraction,
that.
Though. Not now, being a benefit.
He certainly was able to overcome it, but you got to be careful with those walkable parks in New York. They could get to Wemby.
I think the difference is just the fresh air versus, like, did I lose 100 in that G-string?
Yeah, right.
Damn it.
Wait till he's going to be, you know, walking around Central Park playing chess. He's going to miss the start of game 4. He's going to get distracted.
I find him so, I know you're against this, I find him almost impossible to hate. I really do. I know he probably is going to dominate our conference forever.
The shub of old Brunson in the neck last night.
It's dirty, but he laughs at Brunson when Brunson has a problem. He doesn't care about he will not dab you up. He's like, F you, I want to win. He's passionate. I love all that. He's got a reading program developed in San Antonio. I love everything the dude's about.
Kids don't need to read. Let them play video games, all right? They'll be okay.
Did you see
that? Don't educate our youth, Wemby. How dare you?
Final thing, you're going to think this is stupid. He won't do a soda endorsement because he thinks it kills kids. So he's like, I'm not going to represent any
I'll
soda
endorse your water.
No Wemby and Sprite collab coming.
No Sprite collabs.
Let's hear from Wemby, Mike Brown, Jalen Brunson. We'll get some audio of Game 3 next, 105.1 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We got a mail sack in the final hour. Sean Hammond will join us at 8 a.m., Chicago Tribune. And coming up in the next segment, we'll get to the Sorsby stuff. I know Dirt hasn't sounded off on that.
Heck of a day for college athletics yesterday. Oof. That might be a tipping point.
We were reacting to it in real time, and so we were only going off as much information as we could get in the moment, and I thought we did a good job with it, but we've gotten more reaction, and I want to talk about that today, so we'll get to that probably in the 8 a.m. hour after we talk with Sean Hammond.
The story evolved as the day went on.
And so we'll talk about the Sorsby thing. Coming up in the next segment, would you? And I want to ask who on the show is the best.
Ooh.
And I'll tell you why I'm asking that question. But let's get to some audio. NBA Finals Game 3. Talked about the stuff around it. Talked about the game there as some of the stars showed up big time. Castle, Wemby, Fox with a big shot late to kind of put the game away. Brunson had a lot. And then the Knicks just kind of lacking from guys like Bridges. I thought Towns was a little passive.
Mm-hmm.
But OG was great and Hart was hitting his threes. Let's start on the free throw discrepancy. This was a big deal, big talking point. I got Knicks fans in my life. They admit they're biased, but they really didn't like the way the free throw thing was happening.
Yep.
Let's see. From the free throw line in total, the Spurs shot 32. The Knicks shot 22. But in the fourth quarter, if you watched, the Spurs got in the penalty with like 9 minutes to go, which is
second half
insane.
Free throws were 24-8 in the second half. The majority of those coming in the fourth quarter.
Here is Mike Brown on the refereeing of Game 3.
Yeah, I talked to him. You know, they outshot us 14-3 in the third quarter from the free throw line, and I talked to him, and they said, well, this is a foul. I said, okay, maybe right, but. Here are examples where they fouled and it didn't get called. That's the question that I have is that's the question I had with them is, you know, you're right. Maybe we did foul, but they fouled too. And it's like I said, if they do this in Game 4, where it's 24-8 in the second half, it's going to be tough for us to win. Now, there again, I don't want, and it's going to be that because I said it, the story is going to be that, but there are some controllables that we did not do a good job of doing.
So I know people don't like to hear the coach talk about the free throw difference when they lose, and I actually do think that the Spurs got a little bit more of the benefit of the whistle. I don't think that the free throw thing is, I'm not saying that was rigged. I'm not going to that stage. I thought it was really odd how some of the things are called and other things aren't. And I'll say this. I've watched a lot of basketball. This series is as physical a series as I've seen maybe since late 80s type stuff.
Agree with that.
They had a moment in the fourth. Wemby and Towns were, Towns is guarding Wemby. And they even noted on the broadcast, they were like openly shoving each other with one arm, and like they're literally pushing each other back and forth.
And nobody's calling
and
a
Breen's
foul.
Like, whoa, Towns and Wimby are kind of going right. back and forth, and there's no calls. And I feel like so much of these games, this is one of the more physical NBA finals I've ever watched.
Yes.
This is like...
I love it. It's been enjoyable for that reason.
When you watch the 98 finals... and you see some of the Rodman Malone antics. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that, but it's like the whole series. Yeah. It's not just two players getting into it. It just feels Castle had some shots he hit, and I'm like, dude, how is that not a foul? Brunson's driving the lane, and I'm just, how is that not a foul? And it's just like, I think part of the problem with that is, one, it takes some play away, but two, it becomes incredibly hard to officiate a game if you allow so much physicality.
Once you lose it, it's hard to bring back in.
Well, how do you tell then at what physicality is allowed and what physicality exactly. isn't? I'm not saying that's why the Knicks lost the game.
Right.
It's a part of the story. The Spurs outplayed them. I mean, to their credit, and their defense was great. 22 in the first, 20 in the fourth. But when you allow so much physicality, it's got to be an incredibly difficult thing as a ref if you're going to do that. To try to then dictate and determine, well, that's too much of it. It's like, how? How are you determining that the last possession wasn't, but right. this one is? I just, right. I find this series, they're letting them play in a way that I have not seen in a very, very long time.
Look, very smart of Mike Brown to come out after the game and try and work the officials. That's what a good head coach does. Does it impact game four? Does it sway the whistle in one direction or the other? We'll have to wait and find out on that front. And there's been no better example of that over the years than Greg Popovich and the way he used to run the Spurs and how he used to work the officials, especially during timeouts. And you'd come out of it and he'd yell at him and yell at him and yell at him. And we'd all look at him and say, oh, God, there he goes complaining again. And then what would they get the rest of the game? They'd get the benefit of the whistle. And so working the officials on Brown's point is smart. Even if it becomes a bit of a storyline, who cares? You got to get the message out there. And I'm sure, like, this isn't just a one-game thing from New York's vantage point. In game one of the series, yes, they won the game. In that game, they were outshot 25-18 from the free throw line. Okay, not a huge discrepancy, but San Antonio shot more free throws. Game two, yes, they won the game. They were also outshot from the free throw line 27-21. So it's a difference of six. And then last night, at the end of the game, it doesn't seem as bad, but they end up out shooting them by 10 free throws in the game, and there's a massive discrepancy in the second half of the game.
Yeah, some intentional fouls there at the end to try to get breaks.
Let's also add a bit of this is the fact that technical fouls were called one way, rightfully so, and missed the other way, and that's a part of the complaint here. You had the Cornette heart dust-up, where I also agreed with the call. It felt like Cornette wasn't going to do that on purpose.
Cornette didn't mean to do that.
He didn't mean to do that. Heart gets up.
Thought Hart flopped a little bit to try to
dust something
up. He did,
and he shoves him a little bit, so like I have no problem with that. Be a technical foul. You know what else should be a technical foul? Victor Wembanyama shoving the smallest player on the floor on the back of the neck.
I mean,
is that not a flagrant one?
That's a borderline flagrant,
like,
too,
just
if we're going
everything
by the
rules. Else officiating be damned. Just by looking at that, how is that the whole point of what Mike Brown is bringing up? And so you're right that there were fouls late in the game. The technical fouls hurt the discrepancy as well. His whole argument is it didn't go both ways. You miss clear, blatant stuff like that. That impacted the course of the game and the amount of fouls on Wemby. That reaction, Brunson couldn't do anything in return because he already had a foul on him. And so if he gets up and shoves him, now he ends up with a flagrant or he gets a second foul called on him. And you got to sit him down early in the game. And so there's clearly been a one-sided nature to the officiating. And I think you hit the nail on the head. The issue that I have with it, we do this in football as well. You let him play, let him play, let him play. And then in the fourth quarter, here's a PI call. And you're like, dude, they've been doing that all game.
Right.
Why is it now? You let them play all game. And then somehow the Spurs end up in the penalty like 90 seconds into the fourth quarter. Every 10 seconds at the start of the fourth, there was a whistle. Foul. Foul. Foul.
It was a very slow
and you're just,
quarter.
What are we? Okay, yeah. Now, and then the Spurs are just shooting free throws the rest of the game, living from the free throw line. And so there's a frustration there from New York side, and I'm glad that Brown at least brought it up because they've missed some calls, and the most blatant is Wemby shoving Brunson in the back of the head.
Here is Brunson asked about the Wemby altercation.
Jalen, what happened between you and Victor in the first quarter, and did their level of physicality bother you?
No, to answer your second question. And whatever you saw is what you saw.
Good answer.
Not going to give anything.
Good answer.
Here is Wemby on the Spurs' fourth quarter poise to win game three.
Wemby, you've had three now close fourth quarters. What would you think was the biggest difference in you guys actually getting the win today? And do you feel it was more physical, mental, or execution? Or all of them?
I guess a little bit of all. Most importantly, it feels like it's communication.
In what way?
Knowing our coverages, knowing that's on defense, knowing our plays on offense, being there early, and letting our teammates know what to do if we see things.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the Knicks chemistry and it, how good it is. They have the same stuff.
Yes.
They just haven't executed in the pivotal moments, whereas the Knicks have. They missed a shot. The series could be tied 1-1. It could be Spurs 2-1 right now. So right.
Wemby hits the last-second shot, and you got a series lead right now. Going
exactly.
Into game four.
I mean, that's the good thing if you're San Antonio is, I you know, who wins the series, who knows, but you have to be sitting in a pretty positive spot despite being down still in the series of maybe they learn from those first two games. Maybe the Spurs become a wagon now and they win four straight. I have no clue. Maybe it's back and forth. Maybe the Knicks win game four. But
we saw Milwaukee and Giannis do that years ago, lose the first two.
Yes.
Now, granted, they were on the road, not at home, but they went four in a row.
The Rockets in 95 are still the only team in league history to win their first two road games and then win game three at home.
Ah,
yeah,
interesting.
That's a fun little fact for
that
you.
Is, they swept that series, right? And they sweep Orlando.
Yeah, they ended up sweeping Orlando.
Yeah,
yeah.
Somebody brought up that point, and it didn't age well. But I saw that argument of Orlando was the example of this young team with this superstar center in '95, and remember who they beat to get there, to get to the NBA Finals, was the Bulls.
Yeah,
in the conference finals, and it was this like slaying of the dragon.
Everybody thought, here we
go. Oh my
Shaq
God,
and Penny.
We beat the Bulls.
Yeah.
And then you get to the NBA Finals and you kind of lay it, you blow a big lead in game one, you lay a bit of an egg. Now, it didn't age well because the Spurs won last night, and for all we know, they go on to win the series. But I did see that argument made, and I thought, that's interesting. Like, OKC was this team on top of the pedestal, and you got through it, and then you didn't play quite to the level so far in the NBA Finals.
I thought Chuck made a really good point, because after game, it might have been halftime of game two, or it was after game one.
Mm-hmm.
Shaq went at Wemby, and he's like, you're the best player. You got to be good. You
got to play
better. You got
to
dominate. And Chuck's like, Shaq, you literally got swept in a finals when you were in your young 20s in Orlando, and you got beat by the better center player of Akeem.
Yes, at the time in his career, there's no doubt who was the better player.
That's the thing with Wemby, is like, if you want to criticize Wemby when he doesn't play well, I'm totally cool with that. It's the way the league goes. But I love like guys like that. Yeah, you got to be better. You can't be losing. Like, dude, you literally lost.
You
we
got
watched
swept.
You lose in the finals.
You got swept in the
You
NBA
were too
finals.
Young. You weren't ready. Nick
right.
Anderson missed four straight free throws. Like, we watched you go through it, too.
I remember it.
Everybody in league history has gone through this.
Right.
Except Tim Duncan. It's unfair.
And now
Tim
Wemby
Duncan.
Is probably the same.
I mean, yeah. Or
don't
they
let
win.
It happen.
Or
that's
he's...
the biggest reason why I want the Knicks to win.
You just don't want them to win it.
I
yet.
Know the Spurs have titles in their hip pocket.
It feels
and they're
like
counting
it,
on them.
It?
We know they're going to win some. The Knicks might, but it's not a guarantee because we don't know what happens in the East. Hold on, New York. Don't let me down.
All right, we'll pause stuff on the NBA Finals. We'll move on from that. We'll get to Brendan Sorsby coming up in the third hour. We got Sean Hammond's going to join us, Chicago Tribune, at 8 to get the latest on the Bears stadium situation. Their government and the team are fighting. We're kind of dealing with something similar right here. But coming up next, who on the show would you say would be the best mascot? Because locally, we have an opportunity. Let's talk about that next on The Fan. All right, we will talk with Sean Hammond in Chicago because the Bears might be relocating for a new stadium in Indiana.
The Indiana Bears coming to a town near you.
I mean, look, you noted this before. Other teams don't play close to the cities they're listed. Like, I was just at the Niner game. Santa Clara is a 45-minute drive to San Francisco.
It's the equivalent of the Blazers playing in Salem.
Yes, yes. The unique thing of Chicago and Indiana is how close they are.
Yeah.
And so while it's not different than other teams relocating outside of the city limits, it's an odd look, I think, when it's always in a different state.
Yes.
It's a weird vibe that way. People will still go to the games.
Yeah,
but
I mean, the alternative of the Blazers moving to just north of Vancouver.
Like Ridgefield.
Moving to Ridgefield.
If we were the Ridgefield
right.
Blazers, right. But they're still calling us the Portland Trail Blazers.
You're out of the state. It's a little bit different. And I thought Greenberg brought up a good point, Mike Greenberg, because he grew up a diehard Jets fan, and they used to play at Shea Stadium years ago. And he said when they move, like, you're always a fan. But
yeah, they went to Jersey.
It's never the same.
No.
It's never, because it's in the heart of the town that you grow up in and you're rooting for them in, and now it's out of the state. And you still watch, you still go to games, but it's never the same as it was before.
Well, I just want to get the intel in Chicago of how this is really going between the legislators and the team. It's not obviously going well because they might be on their way to Indiana, but can Chicago come in and save things? Can they figure this out?
Yeah.
They balanced their budget. They were celebrating that last week.
Illinois did.
Yeah.
What's the
governor over there? Is it
Pritzker?
Pritzker. He was doing a press conference and they balanced their budgets or whatever, but
hey, good for them.
I just I'm kind of curious, and we're kind of going through the city and the Dundon stuff, so it's maybe a look at a different perspective on a similar thing. Which one of us on this program would be the best sports mascot? The reason I ask this question, Andy Johnson, is because Portland Fire are currently looking for a part-time mascot that pays $100 to $130 an hour.
Okay, how many hours? How many hours do I get on a game night? Does it say? It
has to be four,
at least, right? You got to be there pregame. Early. You got to be there.
You're probably leaving
the game itself takes 2.5 hours,
let's guess,
right?
Four. And let's say it's your first time doing a mascot gig, so you're getting the minimum. You want $400 a game.
$400 a game, and they play 20-something home games, right?
Mm.
And I'm imagining you're getting every home game. You want a mascot there?
Is it 18? How many games in
the
regular season?
44 this season, so 22, I think.
Yeah, 22.
Is it split evenly? Do they don't have like a stupid Vegas
cup
thing?
I think they try to split it evenly. Okay. If they don't, it's one game difference.
So obviously you wouldn't get the full amount because they've already played home games. But
let's say 15 games left.
15 games left? Okay, I'll do 15. So if you were to get the job right
now. Call it four.
I mean, we should be able to do it. $6,000.
Then you got to account for taxes. You're probably a 1099 independent contractor.
Oh, without a doubt, they're going to make you take that out after the facts. We're
going
to pay you in full, and you're going to have to pay these in the back end. Have fun with that. I've had those before.
Would you be a good mascot?
I think I'd be a really bad mascot. I think I'm okay to admit that. I think I'd be a really bad mascot. I'm not a good enough dancer, and I would question my
energy. How much dancing is the mascot?
I feel like dancing is a lot of it. Like, you got to be able to bounce around and move and dance a little bit.
I feel like if they have the big belly, they're doing the.
See, I could do those. What kind of mascot are we talking about?
The Philly Fanatic.
I could do the Fanatic one. I could do that move.
Yeah.
But anything more than that, I'm not a good dancer. I'm not.
But their dance moves are just like.
Dun, dun,
well, yeah,
dun,
you have limited mobility in that costume.
What are we talking to? What's the mascot? Do we know?
It might be the Dalmatian. Maybe they're bringing that back.
They're bringing Spot back.
Spot the Dalmatian.
And that's more of a close to your body mascot.
Why don't we get a real dog? Why don't we do like the SEC football thing? Get a real Dalmatian running around.
Why don't we get, here we
get
go.
Get a fire hydrant near the opponent bench and he goes and pees on it.
Do you need, let me ask you
I
this.
Just trademarked that. Call me fire. I'm built with ideas.
Unless you love watching the guy do the trampoline dunk, which you certainly could say, yeah, dude, that's awesome. I love seeing the flip dunk.
Right.
Aren't we better served to just hire the hottest shirtless firefighter possible with the Dalmatian dog that's real?
Yeah.
Like a firefighter calendar cover guy?
Yeah,
cover
dude.
Boy.
Where's our fireman, Ed?
Well, like if you play
so he
this
just
out,
wears the suspenders.
Suspenders?
The pants and the boots. Yeah.
He's got to have the helmet.
The helmet.
The suspenders will cover the nipples.
Yep.
I don't know if you're not allowed to show male
He's
nipples.
He's got to be super fake
for the younger audience. Yeah.
Super cut.
Yeah.
And then we've got the real Spot dog that's going around and which boy do you want to pet?
What would be...
Who's being a good boy today?
Oh, now we're talking.
Fireman Ed or Spot?
Where's Spot quite often in our household. I'm familiar with that.
Now,
book.
Not all the fire fans are going to like
you
Fireman
like one
Ed.
Or the other, though.
But they might like Fireman Sally.
Well, that's fine, but you got the dog if you're not into the guy.
Well, I'm just saying...
Who
like,
doesn't love a dog?
Right.
We all love dogs.
If you
all
don't
love
like
dogs,
a dog,
you got issues.
I
that's
don't trust
you.
You.
If you were to get an actual live dog mascot... Think like the popularity level of that dog in this
yes.
city would be so much greater than some random dude wearing a Dalmatian costume. You could take that dog places. People would want to go meet that dog.
Oh, yeah, it'd be
like
great.
That dog would be one of the biggest celebrities.
Put it in a Carla Late jersey, like a dog
yes.
jersey mm-hmm. for it.
Teach it some Air Bud tricks where it's like nosing the ball into a little mini hoop on the court.
We have a player whose last name is Barker.
We do? We have a Barker on our team?
Sarah Ashley Barker. Yeah, she's one of our better players.
No, it's perfect. The Barker's wearing the Barker.
Oh, the Barker's wearing the Barker.
To answer your original question, though, I'd probably vote you. I think you would be my vote.
Why me? I was going to vote him.
You think Swag? What's your argument for Swag?
Swag is the guy for $400 extra dollars that might be willing to break his neck.
Hmm.
He already does 15 jobs, so clearly he'll whore himself
more.
Out for money.
One more will not hurt.
One more gig, and they'd be like, we need you to jump off the trampoline and Vince Carter dunk it. He goes, I've never done that. Like, yeah, but it's $400. He goes,
figure it
you
out.
Got it.
You
I got
figure it out. You get a bonus
and
tonight,
then
okay?
All you hear is, Swag's been replaced.
But do you think you'd be a good mascot, Swag?
No, because I'd talk at some point. I can't not talk for that long.
Good argument. Good point.
Can I get a picture? You got it.
Oh, damn it. You just ruined the whole gig. You can't do that. Get him back. Take him back. Changing out mascots.
I'd be a terrible mascot.
You
I don't
think
know
you'd
why
be a bad
why
mascot?
Why do you think I would be good?
I don't know. You seem like you would have the youthful energy needed to be a good mascot.
I'm a good mascot.
You would
timeout.
Get fired for something for doing something inappropriate when not thinking the cameras were on you. That's you would be a great mascot, and then you'd like grab something and make some sort of motion in the corner, and some kid would be filming with their parent's cell phone and be like, local mascot caught humping
his
head off, and you're doing something inappropriate
when they were
with
kids present.
You were in the tunnel, you didn't think anybody could see you, but they did see you and they had to fire you.
What's the Kansas City Chief quarterback, Lynn? He famously was smoking a cigarette at halftime.
Oh, Len Dawson.
Len Dawson, yeah.
That would be me with my head off smoking a joint.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell I'm smoking
a long
fat
quarters,
joint.
Kiddo. Yeah.
I got the mascot body, but I don't have the head on, and I'm sitting in a fold chair, and I'm like, what am I doing with my life?
Like Chuck E. Cheese in the hood taking a breakout behind the restaurant.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Let's go, fire. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. You know what you'd really do? The winning move there would be you rip it, you put the hat on, you exhale, now you've hotboxed yourself.
Now you're just living the
now
dream,
we're
baby.
Just, dude, he's getting goofier.
Now he's
goofier.
The actual fire mascot. He's breathing fire out of his
you
nose.
You give the equipment person back this. Like, what?
Dude, what
hold
did you
hold this joint.
Doing this thing,
don't
man.
Throw it out. I'm not done with it yet.
What's the matter with you, dude? Put it out. I'll save that roach for later, okay?
I'd be good on the concourse. I'd be good in timeouts.
Yeah.
Dude, you're losing me when it's like
I don't
we
have
need
that level of energy
down.
To do it. Yeah,
we need you to do a trampoline.
I'm not doing
flip dunk.
How
I'm
exotic not, do no. you have to get? Because not every mascot gets exotic. That's a good point. If you got to get super exotic, we're all out.
You remember when the Nuggets Rocky mascot passed out and they repelled his limp body?
Dude,
down.
Yeah. He's just
he was just
floating in
there.
The air. I'm at the top of the arena. What do you want from me? In a mascot suit, I got two little beanhole eyes that I could see out of.
We thought he was Owen Harding. Like he
what
was just dead being repelled down.
They killed Rocky.
Terrible. I'm trying to see if there's any.
Good luck to all the
requirements.
Yeah, yeah
minimum requirements.
Do I need 2 years mascot experience?
You basically need somebody that was.
Dude, you're responsible.
Find
for
a duck
scheduling.
Or a beaver or a hop. You know,
get
we got
this.
Those.
Your responsibilities are scheduling, rehearsing, workouts, practice sessions, and any other extracurricular activities.
There's all sorts of community events you have to go to too. Like it's not just games.
So
you're
like Blazers Todd.
Ribbon cuttings.
You're basically him, but you're also having to wear the outfit.
Now imagine it's a hot day.
Yeah, and you got to go to Burns.
You're in Burns.
We're on a Portland Fire Tour.
That
right.
Blaze
Oregon.
Van. Have you ever seen the Blaze Van roaming around?
Oh, I've not. I mean, I've seen social media pictures of it, but I've never seen it in the wild
yeah,
myself.
Yeah, I encountered it. I can't remember where I
the
was
Blaze
driving,
van.
But yeah, I was like, oh.
You have to dance, tumble, flip, dunk off the trampoline, run, jump, balance, throw t-shirts,
I'm
and
out.
Be comfortable with heights.
I'm out.
And have other performance skills to enhance the character, such as
for $100
sign
a night?
Language.
You mean have all this for $100 a night?
Juggling, improvising, and anything else
Sorry.
Basically the team asks of.
Hey, you know who's available? The Doug Fur. Didn't they fire that mascot? Didn't
they
we cut him?
Should.
Didn't the Doug Fur get fired? Wasn't that what we were calling him? Was that his name?
Yeah, it's Doug Fur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We fired his ass, didn't we?
I believe we did.
We cut him. There's a mascot available for you, just like that. Boom.
I think your idea is better. It's nice to have
get
a mascot
an actual
that
dog.
Dogs, but get an actual dog.
You
You're
take
right.
that dog everywhere. It'd be the hero of the community.
Now, do you Ugga the dog? Do you he dies, she dies, and then we replace with the exact same breed and call it the same name?
Have to.
Like spot two.
Yeah, spot the second.
I think
second.
You have to. Spot the second, spot the third.
Spot the fourth.
Spot the fourth.
Gotcha.
It's gotta be a Dalmatian.
Okay.
I think that's the way to go.
All right. Well, if you're interested, the Portland Fire are currently looking for their next mascot. $100 to $130 an hour. And if you have these skills to pay those bills, they need you to come try out.
Come on down.
Contact them at portlandfire.com. Actually, I don't know where you apply. I don't see it on the website.
Probably there.
But probably there. A loaded third hour. We'll dive into the Bryn Sorsby stuff, but we kick it off with Sean Hammond in Chicago, Chicago Tribune. They're going through a stadium debate with local government. We are too. Let's talk with Sean Hammond, who covers the Bears for the Trib. Hour 3 on The Fan.